This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kevin Pollack. Thanking you for joining me once again for this here Mrs. Meza Rewatch podcast. How have you been? Did you have a good week? Are you listening to these back-to-back so there is no week in between? Write to me at mymrsmezapod@gmail.com. Let me know what and how and where and when and why you consume this here podcast. Be reading one of those exact emails later in this one episode. Episode 47, Dana Bash Part 2. So, yeah, Part 1 ended abruptly, I'll give you that. But it was so difficult to find the middle point. And she was gearing up to tell a story about going to a party around the SAG Awards. And as you'll see, as you'll hear, it's a good story. It's a solid story. And I didn't want to cut it short or cut into the middle of it. But if I included all of it, well, now we've gone too long for the middle point of her and my 90-plus minutes together. Is my story, and I'm sticking to it. Love talking with Dana, and so much more to cover here. I hope you enjoyed the first one. Write to me, by mrsmezapod@gmail.com, and let me know. Let me know what you think of these here proceedings. If you hear that scratching sound, it is Halston, the aforementioned tuxedo cat, overdressed for every occasion, that is commented on during some of these proceedings. I guess I should release some video. Get some of the guests to allow for a video. Maybe we'll do a Patreon page. It's just video. Write to me at mymrsmazelpod@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of that idea. Portions of or goodly amounts of the interviews with the video. Yeah, it could be fun. All right. Dana Bash, Part 2. Enjoy.
It just becomes a bit of a nightmare to shoot on location.
I see.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It makes more sense than Rose having to sit through her daughter talking about her husband's sex life in front of her.
You know, I always think about, like, I was watching the SAG Awards and, oh my gosh. Sorry, Kevin, my brain is so tired.
I appreciate.
Who she won? She won for best actress for Beef.
For the first time, the Maisel cast wasn't nominated, so I wasn't there. We won a couple of these ensemble awards over the years, and Rachel and Tony and Alex have all won. And Rachel and Alex were nominated, so they were there. And Tony was nominated for Monk, so the three of them. So who's?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, who? Her name is
Ali Wong.
Ali Wong. Name is Ali Wong, and she's obviously hysterical. But so she's in her acceptance speech, She said her mother, who was 80 something, was there. And she's like, you know, it was on Netflix. So she's like cursing up a storm.
Sure.
And I was thinking about that as it even relates to Maisel. Like now there are female comics who are out all the time saying really raunchy stuff. I mean, obviously, whole idea that Midge was supposed to be one of the, if not the first. And you always think like, well, obviously these women and men have parents and they have to be like totally okay with it. And it was funny because I had just watched the Ali Wong, because I wanted to watch Barbara getting her Lifetime Achievement Award, as one does.
Of course.
From work. And then I stayed and I watched some more of it. And I was thinking about that as it relates to Maisel. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is a interesting thing. I ultimately had to perform stand-up in front of my mom, but my mom was also the kind who... Oh, sure.
Are you... How blue is your act?
Not terribly, but I also had a mom who... Whenever I brought a girl I was dating, for some stupid reason, brought her home to meet my mom invariably would ask, and I think this is true of Jamie, too... My mom would ask how our sex life was.
Oh, my gosh.
And it wasn't to humiliate me. She was very comfortable with that, asking that question.
Did it humiliate you?
Of course. Which was only to the delight of whoever I was dating, and certainly.
I'm just thinking of my now 12-year-old. He would probably never talk to me again.
Well, it's understandable at 12.
I'm understanding. At this point in his life, I am embarrassing when I breathe. So.
Well, that's the age.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the beginning.
You could say kind of whatever in front of your mom when you were doing your stand-up.
And very much so. And my act wasn't blue, but I, given the opportunity to be a little blue in front of mom and the audience, was in fact enjoyable because I knew she would get a kick out of it. All right, Halston, we sense your presence. Oh, okay, even more. There we go.
Is he on the keyboard?
She's not quite on the keyboard.
Halston
is a man's name in life, but in the feline universe, it doesn't matter.
I have a girl, a female dog named Charlie. So.
Oh, I love
Charlie with a Y.
We wildly prefer human names for animals, for pets, for pets. Yeah. Charlie's a great name.
Yeah. She's a great dog too.
And if she's acting up negatively, is it Charles? Has it become a bit more formal?
Yes.
Of course.
Charles. I do say Charles.
Yeah. Try Chaz next time she's being
Chaz. She doesn't really act up. She's actually like super.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to say that I'm going to go downstairs and there's going to be an accident in the family room. But
yep.
We'll see.
Yeah, you've doomed yourself for that.
But look, they're playing. That's
so yeah. Cute. Well, that's it. They get into a little bit of a Tom and Jerry thing. Although both cats. So let's see. When Midge comes home from the set back to the apartment and Rose is waiting up at 5 a.m.
Love that.
How great.
Such a great scene where she's sitting and then they're standing and they're just kind of standing facing each other in the living room, like 6 feet apart, like they're social distancing, you know,
right.
And it's like, whose career is more important? You can't do this because of me. Well, what about me? I don't know. I have to say, maybe this is just the maternal aspect of me. I felt as a mom, it made me feel bad for Midge.
Yeah.
Because as a mom, I feel like if I were in that position and, you know, my son were doing something and it would potentially hurt my career.
Right.
I would put him first in a heartbeat.
Yes.
But then again, it's like she's also... Rose is also in a place where she's finally able to do something that is her own and do something that is professional and make her own money and make her own name. And all of a sudden, this bratty little daughter, who is not so little anymore, is making it hard for her and doing it in a way that is just so antithetical to any social norm at the time.
Shameful.
So, shameful.
And also, shameful. Rose, as you say, is coming into her own, and the series, while being female-centric, is also about empowering women mm-hmm. who are self-determined. So now we've got the same attribute in Rose, and it's blossoming for the first time, certainly mm-hmm. since we've known her. Mm-hmm. And it's extraordinary. And so this face-off is pretty deep and great. And yeah, you do go back and forth in terms of choosing sides. I certainly see the argument from both sides.
Yeah, no, me too. Definitely. Definitely.
Our next stop is the Plaza Hotel for the Shia Baldwin wedding. And this is the first time Shia Baldwin is back in the show since the final episode, or A Jewish Girl Walks Into the Apollo was the name of the episode. And then Midge was left on the tarmac. That was the final episode of season 3. So this is the first time we're seeing him, Shia Baldwin. And I do love the mischievous nature of Susie and Midge both.
Love it.
Instantly trashing the flowers.
Yep. Taking the entire tray of hors d'oeuvres.
Yes.
And feeling bad about liking the taste of the food.
Yeah. Yes. Trip to the bar where the real trashing begins with the, I'll have a triple and throw in some gin. They spot Sidney Poitier and Jim, a very handsome Jimmy Stewart, while eating along the way as well. And then, as they say in the biz, a voice of God announces for the first time as husband and wife, Mr. and Mrs. Shia Baldwin. Shia Baldwin, of course, played by Leroy McLean, who's been a guest on the podcast. And Chinara Hill is playing Mrs. There they are, the momentarily happy couple who enter and float. Well, we don't know how long this might last. We just know someone's entire heart might not be in it.
Yeah.
And we then realize at the end of all of this, as Susie and Midge find themselves in a office where they were escorted, that there's a plan being executed. So yeah. But first, there's also this little moment where Susie slips a silver dish into Midge's purse when they're watching Shia Baldwin on stage, taking every advantage of this ridiculous setting.
Oh, great.
I don't know if you caught it.
Great. A and B, it's also like every Jew, well, I shouldn't say every Jewish grandmother, my Jewish grandmother.
Yeah.
Where it's like when you left the restaurant, if there was one little packet of sweet and lower sugar left in the dish on the table, it was because she missed it, because the rest of them were in her purse along with the rolls.
Yep. Absolutely.
Was that your experience?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And now, for some reason, Jamie was also raised in that. And so her nickname is Depression Baby.
Really?
And she's only 42. Yeah.
Oh. I remember,
but it's when that's
Florida at the Rascal House for the early bird special, and the people who owned places like that, they would just put extra rolls on the table because they knew that they were going to be taken. Because, like, why not? It's part of the shtick.
Yes. Oh, that's so true. It's so wonderful. I do love that about family, the family dynamic that this is sort of handed down and instilled.
Mm-hmm.
Also from Shy and his new bride dancing, he gets on stage and sings, as we find out, a part of his new hit. Such an odd thing to do at one's wedding.
Right. I mean, it's such an example. It's
speaks to character.
It speaks to character, but also speaks to, like, that this is just a show.
Yep.
An actual
Yeah. Introduces my good friend, Mr. Harry Belafonte, played wonderfully by Josh A. Dawson, the actor, who sings a swinging tune. I wanted to mention that Shai Baldwin's singing vocals are all extraordinarily well done by Darius DeHaas. I mentioned this when Leroy was on the podcast.
He doesn't sing.
He acts as Shai Baldwin, but he does not sing. Made that very clear during his audition, and they loved him so much. They said, yeah, you just need to lip sync really, really well.
That's so interesting.
Isn't that great? That's how good he is at lip syncing also.
Wow, that's so Natalie Wood.
Yeah, right. Nice pull. Yeah, see, there's something that most people don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really had no idea he wasn't singing. Okay, so my other question, what do you think is supposed to be going through the mind of the bride? Do we think she knows?
Well, that's fun. That's a fun parlor game, figuring out. No.
You think she does not know? She thinks that this is like a love match and she has no idea.
I don't think she was brought in by management and it made clear to her. No, I think, unfortunately for her, or depending on the settlement, fortunately for her, she is being wooed and ultimately wedded by this beyond charismatic fella. It was a bit of a no-brainer for her. That's my guess. What do you have a sense?
I think that's mine too. That's mine too, because the look on her face was, she was so love struck. It wasn't like, oh, okay, I'm playing a part now of the person who's the wife of a guy who's closeted. And
yeah. And by the way, closeted performers of the day, the audience, which his new bride may have started as a fan.
Right.
Not only no clue, it's not even in the concept of reality.
Right. It was
from Liberace on down. It just wasn't the conversation.
Wait, you really don't think people knew Liberace was gay?
I was a kid. I grew up on him. And I knew what was being talked about in the house.
People didn't think he was gay.
Or they just wasn't a matter of, wait a second, is this guy gay? What, you know, what's happening here? I don't know if my kids should see this. It was just...
It just wasn't discussed.
It wasn't discussed. It wasn't a matter. It was weird.
What about Elton John? Same?
Yeah, no, I feel like Elton was out pretty early.
Yeah.
And there's the difference.
Yeah.
Johnny Mathis is who Shai Baldwin is.
Yes. But he wasn't gay, was he?
Inspired by. There you go. He was.
Oh, see.
And by the way, is, and I hope I'm not outing him because he's still alive, because a friend of mine went to see him perform. I think it's, or I thought it was, until you just were surprised. I thought it was pretty common knowledge.
Okay, this totally proves the entire point of this conversation.
Yes.
Fun fact. My father's aunt, so my grandmother, the one with the rolls and the Sweet and Low in the purse.
God bless her.
Her youngest sister, Aunt Eva.
Love it.
Was a publicist, and one of her clients for a time was Johnny Mathis.
Well, you can fact check with her all you'd like.
No, well, she's no longer with us.
Okay, check her notes.
But I'll check with her son.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought it was pretty well known. But the point was, when Johnny, in this case, Shai Baldwin, were world-renownedly famous, if that's a term, it wasn't even a moment of, I need clarity. What's this guy's deal? You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
And just the whole concept of, you know, of Hollywood.
Yeah. Hollywood, oh, well,
hiding it. That's not,
that's an endless.
Yeah. That hasn't ended.
When we're gathered next, I'll tell you the.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You may have already heard. Yep.
Yeah. But I also love that she was like, you know, screw you. I'm not taking your money.
Fantastic.
Loved it.
extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary, but also real and truthful and uh-huh. and not, well, come on. It was, which it could have been. Because as Susie was reacting, Susie was the voice of the audience saying, that's a car. That's three cars or one very fancy European car. Uh-huh. Just to put a little perspective on it, my parents bought a house for $17,000 and she was being offered $12,000. So, yeah. But very well, when Mid says, I told Shy, I promised Shy I would never tell anyone. I told him. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking anything from you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't even, I don't know, I just loved it. And I loved that she didn't even have to make a point of it. How dare you? She could have been much more outraged, I guess is what I'm saying, as a melodramatic moment. And they never went there. And I was grateful for that.
I agree. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at Joel's apartment, he said, I'm home, May. And she comes out in her dress and then launches into sharing her concerns and anxiety about meeting his parents and the beautiful back and forth between these two. You talked about earlier about May keeping pace. Wowzy, wow, wow, wow. Is this, yeah. Do they up the ante in pace and convo?
Mm-hmm. And him just trying to calm her down.
That's it. The best a mate can do is uh-huh. acknowledge.
Uh-huh.
Don't say you need to calm down. Worst thing possible. I hear you. I feel you. It's going to be okay.
And would you like a drink?
And it being 1961, would you like a drink? Yeah.
And then she ends up not going anyway.
And then, yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, it's pretty amazing. Again, from a standpoint of writing, you've got this moment where it's a come to Jesus for May. In terms of what this really means, she got a dress. She's doing this mm-hmm. because she loves Joel that much. Mm-hmm. And this is what he wants. And then the writers allow us to see just what she's actually going through. Mm-hmm. And the result being, as we now cut to Shirley and Moishe's home, how excited Shirley and Moishe both are to meet the new little lady as they gather at the door to greet their arrival, only to have Shirley certainly hearts broken. Shirley's devastated. Moishe seems better equipped. He might also be relieved.
You think so?
And probably not, because he did go to the bar and say to Joel, knock it off already. You got to. Yeah. Which is one of your favorite moments.
Rachel, Ruth, Rebecca. Well,
do you remember the three names?
Rachel, Ruth, Rebecca. At least you went biblical. I love it.
How great, right?
How great. And okay. The other thing I really like is that, we get the information about what happens at the dinner from the scene, not in the dinner.
How about that?
So clever.
Yes. Yes.
We don't have to watch the whole thing happen. It doesn't have to hit us right in the face. We can hear about it afterwards with a clever line like that.
Yeah. Well said. And yeah. And yeah, how about that? They never cease to amaze me in terms of their.
You're so talented.
Taking a moment and thinking again, how do we execute this? Like the beginning of the season, I've gone on a couple of times now in this podcast, but the beginning of season four, the whole Wonder Wheel, like Coney Island,
uh-huh.
you know, from a writer's standpoint, Midge got fired. How is she going to tell everyone?
Mm-hmm.
That's the work we got to do. We have to have Midge. We have to create a scene So do we get them all together for a meal, one of the family gatherings? The fact that it becomes this Wonder Wheel extravaganza, and it's just about Midge sharing, I got fired. Yep. And all the implications there.
Yep.
Oh, man. So the design here, too, is another misdirect and well executed and well done.
Yep. And that it's a father-son moment.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Mom's not here. Like, what's going on here? Is there actually even a person? Like, tell me what's going on with you, son.
Yeah.
Oh, and after, hold on, we forgot the $5 thing.
Well, he acknowledges that at the beginning of that scene. Yeah. We see Joel do it. We see uh-huh. Joel have the bartender say to him, there's an extra $5 in there. And we're left to assume, huh, was that by design? Was that a test? Sure enough.
Uh-huh. It was a test.
He brags about it to his pops, and his pops is very happy for him.
Right. I mean, that whole.
He's a keeper.
He's a keeper. And it's not that he's proud, but he's like, I taught you well.
I learned from the best, his son says. And best. He quells. Right. He quells. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Oh, it's so subtle. And there's so much there. Yeah, I love those scenes at the bar between the two of them.
Yep. Yeah. We're off to the Gordon Ford show. This is, I think, our first trip to the Gordon Ford show, which becomes such a big, important part of season 5. Maybe I'm remembering incorrectly, but I think that's true because it's all about Sophie's comeback.
Yes.
But I do know that Amy and Dan had plans.
Uh-huh.
Because it was all about, they saw the series as a 5-season arc of her stumbling drunk onto stage and just using it as a therapy session in the pilot, mm-hmm. to her getting on the couch of a version of The Tonight Show.
Mm.
And that's it.
Mm.
Yeah. Season 5, they used this flash forward thing.
I'm sorry. They went into the whole series with that vision?
Yes.
But they shot the pilot.
Yes.
But when they shot the pilot, that was their sort of long-term goal.
So I was not in the pilot. The in-laws, Shirley and Moish, were brought in to the very next episode, which would be episode 2 of season 1, and then thereafter. And so
but Amy and Dan have told you that was their.
So when plan. We started winning Emmys that first season.
Yeah.
A lot of us, myself at the lead of the pack, were in Amy's face saying, remember how you said the thing about just 5 years and we're done? And then the following year, we won more Emmys. We ended up winning like 20.
So you wanted to do more.
Well,
why not?
We also knew, felt, and still say it's the best gig ever.
Sure.
Also, lightning in a bottle to break through the conversation of 700 scripted shows now on all platforms, but then to become a worldwide hit. Like I was told, the number one entertainment export to India from America in television.
Really?
And I think it's the Bollywood connection. I think it's the music and the wardrobe and the family element that there's a real connection.
That's so interesting because I always, now I've totally got you off track here, but
no, it's
I
okay.
Wonder, Kevin, I always wonder how people who aren't either Jewish
or New Yorkers
got it.
So it's a mystery to New York Jews for sure, or Florida Jews, or, East
Florida
Coast.
Florida is just Southern New York.
It's East Coast Jews. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were doing the early first season, and I mentioned this, but I have to repeat it for this context. When I got to work on episode 2, began that process, it was one of my first questions for Tony Shalhoub. Mm-hmm. He and I had never met because you either hired him or you hired me. That was the trajectory of our character actor
career.
Is
that right?
It is right.
Did you read for Monk?
No, I didn't read for it. It did come by my purview.
Uh-huh.
That's a whole other story.
Okay.
That I'm thrilled Tony ended up doing it because it was extraordinary work done by a master and lovely 9-year run and just a beautiful thing. But so we had never met. And so I was, you know, getting to know him, this, that, and other thing, and asking, when you were doing the pilot, what did you, because when we watched the pilot, you know, when I was asked to join the show, when I got picked up from pilot to two seasons, Amy and Dan just, you know, called up and said, will you join the circus? I watched the pilot before the conversation. It's stunning and extraordinary and visionary and unlike anything I'd ever seen and all of that. But as artists, we're always asked, when you were doing A Few Good Men, for example, did you know, you know, when you were doing Usual Suspect, did you know?
Yeah.
You don't. You never do. In fact, you learn very early on. You cannot count on any of this seeing the light of day. So Tony said what you just said, which is, well, when we shot the pilot, I thought, you know what, the Jews of the Upper West Side, he even narrowed it down to a neighborhood. The Jews of the Upper West Side of New York are going to love this show. So the fact that it travels so well around the world.
But I think you're right. It's I get it now that you say the Bollywood thing, because family and the banter and the, I mean, that is.
Yeah.
That definitely goes beyond the Jewish religion and culture.
And one of the probably most prevalent demographics of fans of the show that have approached me in public, in life, dinner, whatever, are African-American women in their early 20s.
Really?
That was also a surprise. But again, the connection to family, because I asked them, so what is it about the show you like? And they love that it's female-centric. They love that it is the trajectory and journey of this woman who in her early 20s or mid 20s sets out on her own with self-determination and what have you, but also the family relationships and the wardrobe and the music. So all of these elements spoke to the world audience. That's why getting back, we wanted this to go more than 5 years just because it's the greatest officially successful gig. And anywho, so we did chat about the Gordon Ford Show in the sense of what it meant for Sophie and Susie. But I do want to say that the writing and execution of performers of the back and forth between Gordon, his bold questions and the way Sophie chooses to answer them, initially being hilarious and rising to the occasion, but eventually talking about, in a more.
She was vulnerable and raw and honest.
Yeah. And so impactful.
Yeah. Was Sophie Lennon based on anyone?
We all thought it was sort of Minnie Pearl-esque. Huh. But like Midge, it was based on several dynamic performers of the time.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, what do you think in 1960... A host would ask those pointed questions the way that he did?
I thought the same thing, but because Gordon Ford, they make references to The Tonight Show with Jack Parr,
right,
within the context of the series. So Gordon Ford is not meant to be The Tonight Show. So then he's amalgamation of Dick Cavett, who did talk very straightforward and ask those tough questions.
Real quick, it's also mentioned that Gordon Ford, whenever Susie goes to pitch Sophie to
my car,
they mentioned that Gordon Ford's always number two in the ratings
to Jack Parr. Yeah,
to Parr or to he's always behind Jack Parr.
He's always behind Jack Parr.
Yeah. Hi.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks, Dana. Jamie
says hello. She said hi, Dana Bash. Yeah. Yes. So because Gordon Ford was fabricated, then again, they do an amalgamation. There were a few other local New York late night talk shows. Susskind. Didn't Susskind have one that was more news?
Oh, no.
I feel that's true. Asking more hard-hitting questions. And then, of course, yeah, it almost felt like a Mike Wallace moment.
Well, it felt like, or like a
Ed.
Yes, Ed. Yes, I know what you're saying. And that would be a little earlier, but yeah.
Yeah, person to person.
Edward R. Murrow, yeah.
Edward R. Murrow, like a person to person.
Yes. And he was more of a journalist, right? So didn't he ask? Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. In the moment.
I loved it.
It's so.
And then with Susie standing in the wings, watching and going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then like, she's gone.
Everything she goes through, we see in her eyes.
Huh?
Yeah.
She's so good.
Oh, yeah. And then you're right. Then she's gone in that last moment and it registers on Sophie's face. Beautiful, incredible. And from there, Susie ends up back at work at the Susie Meyerson and Associates, where she meets up with Dinah and, in fact, hires her on the spot because she was there for 7 hours waiting, which is so great. Dinah Rutledge, played by Alfie Fuller wonderfully and is a big part of season 5 and the rest of season 4, of course. And once again, as you pointed out, Susie's so less than knowledgeable about how this all works. Mm-hmm. And less than Dinah, who is instantly giving her some insights on what happens next.
Right, because Dinah just has the intuition.
Yeah, right.
She can find Joel at work in 4 seconds, and Susie had no idea how to even begin to approach that.
Yeah, isn't that? And then I don't know if you remember later in the season, Dinah and Susie have the assistant across the hall, across the alleyway with
With the wire, the clothing wire. I love that.
Yeah. Beautiful. That whole office structure and the way Frank and Nikki, the two Goombas who set the whole thing up, they come in and out.
Yep.
Had a lovely Sunday Italian feast with Eric Palladino and his wife, Jamie, and their friends at their Sunday, what would you call it? It's not Sunday roast, it's Sunday gravy, which is the sauce, the Italian, the red sauce.
Yeah. Really?
That happened last night. Yeah, I had the two actors who play Frank and Nikki. Eric plays Frank. I had him on, and so we got a little more friendly. And in talking, he said, "You got to come to the Sunday gravy."
You were never in scenes with them, probably, right?
And that's what Jamie was saying last night as we were driving home. You guys get along so incredibly, but I'm just realizing you never had any scenes together. So what would happen is we would be shooting the same day because they were covering some of his scenes and some of the scenes I was in at different times that day. So we did cross paths and at table reads and then at gatherings.
Table. Yeah.
And all those awards parties. Like the SAG where we won a couple of times. Yeah. It's so funny how you fall in and out of favor at those awards things. I mean, they were over first three seasons. We literally won 20 Emmys in the first three seasons. Bonkers.
Bonkers.
And then between Fleabag and then the soccer Sudeikis, Ted Lasso. Yeah.
Ted Lasso.
Yeah. And now the bear.
The time space continuum is like so off for me. I didn't even realize that this is so season 5 was eligible this year.
Yeah, and we were nominated for a handful, actually 14 Emmys again, and we won 2 this year. Our cinematographer and hair and makeup for a period show won. So we ended up with 22. But yeah, we were nominated for Critics' Choice. We're kind of, and Golden Globe. We're nominated for kind of everything except for the SAG Awards. But as I said, Rachel was individually nominated. Alex was individually nominated. So that was great. Because those two really are the heart and soul of the show, let's face it. So it was great that at least when those awards, when you fall in and out of favor, or they're just moving on to the next new exciting show. That's basically what.
Yeah. The good news is that it was 5 seasons. The bad news is at season 5, there's other new stuff.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys watch The Bear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So loved it. Loved it. But season 2, which is the one we would have been up against and the one that's winning all the awards now. Season 2, not only it's in the comedy category.
I know. I don't get that. It's not funny.
Not only.
She's funny.
Is it not funny? As I like to say, it's the least funny drama I've ever seen.
I mean, there are funny people in it.
Oh, yes. And season 1 had some funny moments, a lot of them.
Yeah, but it was definitely not. I mean, oh my gosh, that dinner scene. Well, now we're talking about the wrong show. Beautifully intense.
Beautifully acted, beautifully written. Yeah. And please get out of the comedy category for those of us that had one last foot in it. The show ends on that taxi cab ride with Midge seeing something out the window.
Time out.
Yeah.
You forgot the scene with Shy Baldwin in the bathroom.
Oh, thank you for bringing us back.
That was amazing.
My favorite scene of the show.
Oh my gosh. It also just breaks your, my heart was breaking for both of them.
Yeah. And
because he's just living such a, you know, he has to hide who he is and all that means for his mental health and emotional health and his reality and all that. And where he says, I bought her a house in Beverly Hills. Ugh. As opposed, and she's like, you mean both of you or something like that?
Right. And also the fact that they gave Midge the opportunity to say everything she had been feeling, and in life you just never get those moments.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do some fiction with this much heart and soul to play out that beat and that moment and have it not be anger driven, you know, there's some hurt feelings at the top of it. Mm-hmm. Certainly. But when she and Rachel in those moments with those words, beautifully written scene, but she got that rare opportunity that never comes in life.
To say she was sorry.
To say, I'm sorry.
Screwed up.
And to not, you know, you think it's going to just be about why did you fire me? Oh, no. I just want to get on the plane so I can say how sorry I was. And she even says, not to get my job back. There are other jobs.
But because you were my friend and I screwed up and I hurt you and I needed to apologize.
And even playing out the next beat, he says, I'm going to be in town soon. Yeah. Let's get together for a drink. And she gets to say, I learned that lesson.
Mm-hmm. No friends.
We're not friends. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that was so good.
So good. Beautiful. Thank you.
I loved her dress in that. I forgot to also say. I mean, the costume people.
Donna.
Your show.
Yep.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Where are those clothes now?
So a lot of them were given to Rachel. Well, not a lot, but some were given to Rachel and some were put into Television Broadcasting Museum. Television Academy possibly got some. They toured on their own. In fact, as part of our season 5 premiere week promotion in New York, we took over 5 windows at Bergdorf.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I remember this.
And a three block pink carpet over on the sidewalk.
I remember this.
But yeah, 5 windows at Bergdorf.
Bergdorf's got a lot of love in those scripts.
Yes. That doesn't hurt.
No.
But I have your people find you an incredible book that Donna published. It's the ultimate book about the wardrobe throughout the seasons, each character. She tells the stories behind what inspired them.
I love that. I will definitely get that.
Yeah. A quick search, I'm guessing, of Amazon.
I'll find it.
Donna, I want to just take this moment to call her out. Her name has always been difficult for me, and I own it. But it is one that needs help for me. It's spelled Zakowska. And when I had her on the show, she walked me through the pronunciation, I think, four times.
Oh, my God. So spell it again.
It's Zakowska, ultimately, but it's spelled Zakowska. So if you look up her name and her book.
Okay, well.
It's coffee table size and quite the weight. But it is extraordinary.
That's terrific.
And I'm so glad you mentioned it, because it is by far one of the most magical things about the show. And she is also...
I mean, it's definitely one of the main characters.
Right.
I mean, not only hers, but Rose's and...
Oh, the hats. The hats alone in the tea room.
Oh, my God.
The scenes in the tea room when Rose goes to have tea as she's building her business.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I interrupted you. The taxi.
Oh, no, I was just wrapping things up, sort of. Okay. So I'm so glad you brought me back to my favorite scene the entire, which I had made notes on, but we jumped around a little. So I thought, oh, don't go back to the wedding, but it's all about what happens in that bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Just beautifully played and written and magical. Yeah. The taxi cab, she's just headed home from the wedding, having dropped Susie and giving instructions to the cabbie. No surprise there. Micromanaging how the cabbie's going to drive.
I cannot relate to that at all.
Am I reminded of Holly Hunter in Broadcast News?
That is so Holly Hunt in Broadcast News / me and every single Uber. Even though the Uber driver now has GPS, which will tell him exactly how to go, far better than I can.
Yep.
But
relieves you of that obligation.
Some of us can't help ourselves.
Yeah. No, I drive Jamie crazy with my, if you just make a U-turn here, you're going to save yourself a lot of misery. Yeah. So at the end of that, Midge does see something out the window, tells the cabbie to pull over. And before he finishes pulling over, in fact, she's already hopping out. We don't know what she's seen and is racing after, but we do at the beginning of the very next episode, which apparently you had to start watching.
I wanted to start watching it.
Yeah. You made a point, a note.
Yeah. And that was one of those, what do you call them? A one-er?
Yeah.
Warner. I think that was one, right? When he's in her bedroom.
Yep.
And they're going through the apartment and he's like totally confused.
Yes.
Where he is or who he's with.
If you end up rewatching six, you'll probably end up watching the last two, 7 and 8 of this season. And in episode 8 of season 4, there is a winner to beat all winners at the Wolford Theater. That starts with Lenny, who has come to see Midge, and there's a raid.
I remember that.
And it starts in the dressing room. They end up backstage with a curtain. They open the curtain, and what we see in this one-er, their POV, is the raid happening with 30 or 40 extras fighting and people being arrested, and then the curtain's closed. So we just know all of that was staged as part of this one-er in the middle of the one-er. So then... once the curtains close back up, we follow Lenny and Midge back into the dressing room where there's another cacophony of, it's just the most intense. And I will cover it in detail when we get to season 4, episode 8. A little teaser. You're exhausted. Please get some sleep after eating something. And thank you so much.
I'm so grateful that you asked me. I really feel so honored. And it was so much fun.
Oh, it means the world to me that you made time. And this was incredibly fun, as I knew it would be. I'll let you know when it drops. Not that you'll listen to it. I don't know if you're able to listen to.
I'll listen to it. Sure.
Okay.
I'll send it to all my friends who absolutely adore Maisel. In fact, I was telling my staff I was doing this today and they were like,
oh, great.
I love Maisel. I love it. I'm so excited.
Well, it is one of the weird things about the podcast world. Unless you start the podcast while you're doing the show and you can plug it on your own network. You know, I run into Maisel fans all the time, obviously. And when I tell them I'm doing this podcast, this is the first they're hearing of it. So yes, any which way you want to help get the word out. My goodness, is that appreciated. Because for Maisel fans...
I'll put it on the socials. As
nice.
They say.
Yeah.
As say.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Good to see you.
Love to your son and fella.
I will.
Noah? Is that?
Jonah.
Jonah. I knew there was a no.
Yeah.
Jonah. How is Jonah? Life is good?
Life is good. We are deep in bar mitzvah prep.
Oh.
His bar mitzvah is in like 6 weeks.
Oh. And how do they study the Haftorah these days? In my day, it was a record. And then I assumed it went to CD or cassette tape. What is it now?
Now he tried to learn the trope. I don't know how much he actually learned, but then the tutor says it into the phone.
Yep. Yep.
Texted.
Yep. Yeah. That's
he just
perfect.
Plays it on his phone.
I knew it had to have evolved from.
Oh my gosh. It's like,
yeah,
it's the technology is really amazing, but yeah.
Well, mazel.
Thank you.
In 6 weeks and, you will survive.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. I'm more stressed out than he is.
Of course.
How about that? There we go. We wrap it up. Dana and I with a conversation about Jonah's bar mitzvah. Oh, perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Love her. How enthusiastic. It's so great. Over the years, of course, I have met many of famous folk who, you know, would be very complimentary and very nice and very sweet and go out of their way to make sure I knew how much they loved the show. So we're going to be talking to a number of them, and Dana was the first. As I threatened, we have Patton Oswalt coming up to wrap up season 4 in a few weeks. But I just love that, Dana Bash. Love my conversations with her. Write to me at my MrsMaisel@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought. Won't you? Oh, yeah. So that was episode 5. Jane Lynch to break down episode 6 of season 4. That'll be coming up next in a 2-part. It's actually parts 2 and 3. Part 1 of a 3-parter with Jane was teased earlier. Let's get to one of your emails now, shall we? This one from Sophia. Hi, Kevin. Really loving the podcast. One of the many scenes that stuck out for me in season 2 is the scene in the 4th episode. Midge, Abe, and Rose arrive at their cottage in the Catskills. Oh yeah, I love that so much. And we have talked about that. She's asking what it was like for the actors and the people involved. Several of us have talked about that exact arrival scene. It is breathtaking and wonderful. The camera's locked off and the comings and the going. We hear that from inside, as you mentioned. But then you also write, Sophia, P.S., another highlight of the Catskills episode is a scene in episode 5 where you're talking on 2 phones in the recreation room. I love when you speak Yiddish and you get into an argument with Abe. Your delivery is hysterical and you're always so much fun to watch. Yeah, thank you, Sophia from NYC. So much fun to shoot that. Oh, that was one of my favorite scenes to shoot. Sorry. I don't know that I've talked too much about it. It was glorious. I love scenes with me and Tony, and we've talked a lot on the podcast about how much fun it was for all of us to be away on this location after shooting season and a half in New York and sound stages and locations. But being away as a cast and crew is really phenomenal. But those moments where Moshe is working two phones, one on each hand, so much fun, so much energy. And I did have to learn some Yiddish for it. But yeah, and also that was one of the great moments where Abe and Moshe are butting heads. Oh, I love that. Can never get enough of that. Or your emails, Sophie. So thank you. Keep them coming. That one back from August of 2023. Thank you all very much for writing in. And please continue to do so. My Mrs. Maisel Pod at gmail.com. And again, Jane Lynch, part two, part three, the next couple of weeks. Look forward to that. Until then, I'll see you in my dreams. And please, goodness gracious, be kind to each other. Oh, hey, one more thing. On the Johnny Mathis, yeah, I felt so bad afterwards listening to our conversation in that moment because as respectful as I try to be when I said, oh, I hope I'm not outing him, I didn't remember if he had spoken about it a lot, and I looked up afterwards, and of course he has spoken about it a number of times, and I was so caught off guard, in fact, that Dana was not aware, and so, yeah, I just wanted to sort of own that moment and be a little respectful with how I listen to it and think about it after the fact, in the moment. And now, nothing but respect, of course. That's it. Be kind to each other. I try to lead by example, as you can see.
Okay, closing credits time. My Mrs. Maisel Pod was created by me, your host, Kevin Pollack, research writer, producer, Jamie Fox, and our engineer, recording, post-production producer genius is Ken Plume. My Mrs. Maisel Pod is brought to you by the fine folks at Q-Code. Q-Code. Sounds like something, doesn't it? Oh, lastly, you should know, I'm told by legal to make this crystal clear, that my Mrs. Maisel Pod was not sanctioned in any way, shape, or form by Amazon Prime, nor the show's creators Amy Sherman Palladino and Dan Palladino, although I feel the need to mention I did get their blessing. Okay, good. That should save me some legal.
Everyone needs a break from the real world. That's why we played games as kids, and that's why we should play games as adults. I'm Troy LaValle.
And I'm Joe O'Brien. And back in 2015, we started a podcast called The Glass Cannon Podcast, a show made up of comedians and actors playing a fantasy role-playing game.
And now is the perfect time to start listening because we just started a brand new story.
It's basically Lord of the Rings meets Game of Thrones meets X-Files.
Search for The Glass Cannon Podcast on your podcast app of choice. Hey, life is hard, so come play pretend with us.